Excuse me, but I have to interrupt you here again. What about the person who's sick, but has the faith that will move mountains and so thinks, says, believes he's going to get better, only to die 6 weeks later? How does that square with all this positive thinking affirmative action stuff?
That's good. You're asking the tough questions. You're not simply taking my word for any of this. There is a place on down the line when you'll have to take my word for this, because eventually you'll find that we can discuss this thing forever, you and I, until there's nothing left to do but try it or deny it. But we're not at that place yet. So let's keep the dialogue going. Let's keep talking. The person who has the faith to move mountains and die 6 weeks later has moved mountains for 6 weeks. That may have been enough for him. He may have decided on the last hour of the last day, okay, I've had enough. I'm ready to go on now to another adventure. You may not have known of that decision because he may not have told you. The truth is, he may have made that decision quite a bit earlier, days, weeks earlier, and not have told you, not have told anyone. You have created a society in which it is very not okay to want to die. Very not okay to be very okay with death. Because you don't want to die, you can imagine anyone wanting to die, no matter what their circumstances or condition. But there are many situations in which death is preferable to life, which I know you can imagine if you think about it for even a little bit. Yet these truths don't occur to you. They're not that self-evident when you are looking in the face of someone else who is choosing to die. And the dying person knows this. She can feel the level of acceptance in the room regarding her decision. Have you ever noticed how many people wait until the room is empty before they die? Some even have to tell their loved ones, "No, really, go. Get a bite to eat. Or go get some sleep. I'm fine. I'll see you in the morning." And then when the loyal guard leaves, so does the soul from the body of the guarded. If they told their assembled relatives and friends, "I just want to die," they would really hear it. "Oh, you don't mean that." Or, "Now, don't talk that way." Or, "Hang in there." Or, "Please don't leave me." The entire medical profession is trained to keep people alive, rather than keeping people comfortable so that they can die with dignity. You see, to a doctor or a nurse, death is failure. To a friend or relative, death is disaster. Only to the soul is death a relief, a release. The greatest gift you can give the dying is to let them die in peace, not thinking that they must hang on or continue to suffer or worry about you at this most crucial passage in their life. So this is very often what has happened in the case of the man who says he's going to live, believes he's going to live, even prays to live, that at the soul level, he has changed his mind. It is time now to drop the body to free the soul for other pursuits. When the soul makes this decision, nothing the body does can change it. Nothing the mind thinks can alter it. It is at the moment of death that we learn who in the body-mind-soul triumvirate is running things. All your life you think you are your body. Some of the time you think you are your mind. It is at the time of your death that you find out who you really are. Now, there are also times when the body and the mind are just not listening to the soul. This, too, creates the scenario you describe. The most difficult thing for people to do is hear their own soul. Notice that so few do. Now, it happens often that the soul makes a decision that it is time to leave the body. The body and the mind, ever servants of the soul, hear this, and the process of extrication begins. Yet the mind, ego, doesn't want to accept. After all, this is the end of its existence. So it instructs the body to resist death. This the body does gladly, since it too does not want to die. The body and the mind, ego, receive great encouragement, great praise for this from the outside world, the world of its creation. So the strategy is confirmed. Now, at this point, everything depends on how badly the soul wants to leave. If there's no great urgency here, the soul may say, "All right, you win. I'll stick around with you a little longer." But if the soul is very clear that staying does not serve its higher agenda, that there is no further way it can evolve through this body, the soul is going to leave. and nothing will stop it. Nor should anything try to. The soul is very clear that its purpose is evolution. That is its sole purpose, and its sole purpose. It is not concerned with the achievements of the body or the development of the mind. These are all meaningless to the soul. The soul is also clear that there is no great tragedy involved in leaving the body. In many ways, the tragedy is being in the body. So you have to understand the soul sees this whole death thing differently. It, of course, sees the whole life thing differently, too. And that is the source of much of the frustration and anxiety one feels in one's life. The frustration and anxiety comes from not listening to one's soul.
Okay. Okay, so how could I best listen to my soul? If the soul is the boss, really, how can I make sure I get those memos from the front office?
The first thing you might do is get clear about what the soul is after and stop making judgments about it.
I'm making judgments about my own soul?
I just showed you how you judge yourself for wanting to die. You also judge yourself for wanting to live, truly live. You judge yourself for wanting to laugh, wanting to cry, wanting to win, wanting to lose, for wanting to experience joy and love. Especially do you judge yourself for that.
I do.
Somewhere you've come across the idea that to deny yourself joy is godly, that not to celebrate life is heavenly. Denial, you have told yourself, is goodness.
Are you saying it's bad?
It is neither good nor bad. It is simply denial. If you feel good after denying yourself, then in your world that is goodness. If you feel bad, then it's badness. Most of the time you can't decide. You deny yourself this or that because you tell yourself you are supposed to. Then you say that was a good thing to do, but wonder why you don't feel good. And so the first thing to do is stop making these judgments against yourself. Learn what is the soul's desire and go with that. Go with the soul. What the soul is after is the highest feeling of love you can imagine. This is the soul's desire. This is its purpose. The soul is after the feeling, not the knowledge, but the feeling. It already has the knowledge, but knowledge is conceptual. Feeling is experiential. The soul wants to feel itself, and thus to know itself in its own experience. The highest feeling is the experience of unity with all that is. This is the great return to truth for which the soul yearns. This is the feeling of perfect love. Perfect love is to feeling what perfect white is to color. Many think that white is the absence of color. It is not. It is the inclusion of all color. White is every other color that exists combined. So, too, love is not the absence of an emotion, hatred, anger, lust, jealousy, covetousness, but the summation of all feeling. It is the sum total, the aggregate amount, the everything. Thus, for the soul to experience perfect love, it must experience every human feeling. How can I have compassion on that which I don't understand? How can I forgive in another that which I have never experienced in myself? So we see both the simplicity and the awesome magnitude of the soul's journey. We understand at last what it is up to.